Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 165, recorded July 15th, 2010. I've said too much. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Go to Assist Express. If you're in tech support, clients rely on you for fast and reliable service. Help them the fast and easy way with Go to Assist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit gotoassist.com/windows. And by Carbonite Pro. With prices starting at $10 a month, all of your Office PCs can be backed up safely and automatically. For a free trial and to learn more, visit carbonitepro.com. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. This is Windows Weekly, episode 165. Paulie Thurrott is here.
Jeez, there
he
we
just
go.
Became a character on The Sopranos. Hey, Paulie! Yeah. He's here to talk about everything having to do with those good folks in beautiful Redmond, Washington. The Microsoft.
You know, if I was on The Sopranos, I would have gotten whacked in season one.
Yeah, you would.
People wouldn't even remember me. They'd be like, remember that guy? No.
Paulie, you want to take a boat ride with me?
Yeah. Exactly. That would have been it.
Bring your cement overshoes.
A block of concrete and some rope. Yeah. Would have went on a little drive out onto the water.
Hey, I'm just busting your chops, man. Paul Thurrott is editor-in-chief of Windows IT Pro. I don't know what the hell it is. What
Windows
is it?
Sorted something.
Sorted. The super site. The super site for Windows. Winsupersite.com. He's news editor from .com. C-A-L-M. He's also never a rant, only calm, well-thought-out pieces.
Oh, no. I don't get me wrong. I can rant, but I don't typically rant.
No, you're not a ranter.
I don't. I can.
There's some people who have a reputation. Molly Wood is a ranter. This is what she wants. She has a website called Molly's Rants. But you're not a ranter. You're a journalist. You're a professional. You're a man.
I'm not trying to prop myself up. That's not necessary.
I'm not anything.
I'm just whatever. I mean,
you are what you are.
And what I am. But I mean, you know, I'm not like a spitting, you know, crazy guy.
I think you're
usually.
fiery Paul Thurrott.
Given the right circumstances.
He's Popeye. So whatever. He's also the guy who wrote Windows 7 Secrets and is writing the Windows Phone Secrets, which will be out as soon as Windows Phone decides to descend from heaven.
Yeah. Yes.
Meanwhile, he's here to talk about the latest Windows stuff. How are you? You're going to Germany soon.
I am.
To flee the weather?
I know. Well, that's the way it's working out. You know, last summer was the coldest, rainiest, weirdest summer ever. And this summer is summer, apparently. It's been 90 degrees every day and hot. And our lawn looks like hay. I don't know. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
We get that in California. Everything turns to hay.
Usually here in the summer, it's like this lush, you know, green topiary. I don't know. But it's just... It's dry now. You know, it's hot. It's been hot.
Well, you got air conditioning. I can see it behind you.
Yep. It's off today.
Is it really?
By the way, off today for the first time in 2 weeks easily. Wow. I mean, wow. Yeah.
Well, I want you to take it easy, relax, and enjoy the beautiful weather. And tell us a little bit about Windows. What the heck is going on with Windows?
Does this mean that you don't have my show notes yet?
I do. And I know that the subject number one is the hottest, latest news on Windows Phone.
Okay. Just checking.
No, I know. I know exactly. You see, I'm playing it cool instead of like leading you in.
Well, I was going to say, usually you have
I wanted to just kind of let you take the lead here. Would you prefer
I'm uncomfortable with this.
Are you?
No, it's okay. I can go either way.
Oh, look, Paul, a Windows Phone update.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Okay.
Leo, thank you for raising this important issue. No. So there will probably be regular Windows Phone updates from here on out, maybe.
Updates, right? I mean, not to the phone, obviously, but to...
Right. Hopefully not to the phone. Yeah. I've been screwed in that way before, believe me.
The book is not done.
Yeah, you know, as we're heading into the final leg of this development process, you know, things are starting to speed up a little bit, so it's kind of interesting. So a lot of updates this week. You know, this first thing actually happened about a month ago, but in late June at Cannes, a Microsoft executive, a Microsoft vice president, slipped out that they plan to launch Windows Phone in October.
Not November, and October.
In October specifically, yeah. So that's been the most specific, you know, public comment about the dates. And it sort of corresponds roughly to what my understanding is, you know, when things can happen. So, you know, they talked a bit about the worldwide availability stuff, you know, that they plan to ship this in a variety of languages in many, many markets, 17 markets, you know, at launch. And so it's going to be a big worldwide launch, not U.S. only. This raises a bunch of questions, and one of the things I can't answer yet, I'm still waiting for final confirmation on this, but one of the many issues that this raises is what happens with something like Zune Pass or Zune Marketplace, where these things right now are only available basically in the United States, or in limited fashion, I think in Canada perhaps. Zune Marketplace I think is in Canada, but Zune Pass probably not. So once you make this stuff available to Windows Phone, in fact, once you require this stuff for Windows Phone, you know, how does that impact where Zune Marketplace especially, but also Zune Pass, you know, where these things are available? I think having a Zune Pass, if you're a, you know, a music lover, obviously will increase your enjoyment of this phone dramatically. So this is something I'm still wondering about.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is a Zune in many ways. It has the Zune UI, but it's very focused around media, right?
The phone itself, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a combination device. I guess like any modern smartphone, it has a lot of the digital media stuff. It's got a great games capability, you know, that works on Xbox Live and so forth. It's got the office stuff, you know, email, calendar, and all that, too. So it kind of crosses the line between business and consumer, but it does do both. And the music and video stuff and the picture stuff on the phone is particularly strong. And the inclusion of the Zune software on there, I think, is a fantastic add. Although, you know, nobody even knows what it is. That's the killer. I mean, the Zune HD stuff is beautiful. The Zune software that was on the Kin is fantastic. The Zune software on the Windows Phone is great. But, you know, for many people, this is sort of a relative unknown, which is too bad. There was an article today, I think it was in Computer World or in one of those publications. I kind of trashed the Zune stuff, but I think there's a big misunderstanding about what that is. You know, there's an experience in one of those panoramic hubs on Windows Phone called Music and Videos, you know, Music Plus Videos. Mm-hmm. It's not actually Zune, right? Zune is an application, and and the Zune application is exposed through that hub. But it's important for people to understand that other applications can also be published into that hub. And we know that, for example, Pandora is an example of an application that will be made available through the Windows, I'm sorry, through the Music and Videos hub on Windows Phone. So, yes, it does provide a way to play music and podcasts, videos, you know, TV shows and all those things. And you can interact with the Zune store online and get all that content and all that stuff. But the Zune part of it is not the only music and video, you know, functionality. I mean, you can do other stuff on there too. So it's not like you're locked into using the Zune. And I think that's a little bit of a misconception. On the other hand, as far as PC connectivity goes, one of the weird issues with Windows Phone is that the Zune PC software is the only software on your PC that will interact in any way with the phone. So if you want to do things like download pictures from the phone to your PC, you actually do have to go through the Zune software. You can't use it like a digital camera, right, and use other software, like the software built into Windows. Mm. Yeah, which is a strange decision in my opinion, but and hopefully one that will change over time. But at least at launch, you will need to have that Zune software on your computer to interact with the device.
Just like you need iTunes to do an iPhone, kind of?
Yes, except for one thing. Obviously, you have to have iTunes to use an iPhone.
Right. I mean, You have to plug.
Can't even get it started. Yeah. But beyond that, if all you wanted to do was take pictures with your iPhone and then connect the iPhone to your computer and download those pictures. Mm-hmm. You don't actually do that in iTunes.
Right.
You do that with the software built into your computer.
Now, that's on Windows, by the way. On the Mac, it would launch iPhone. I mean, iPhoto.
Yeah. Right. Well, by default, but see,
oh, but even you couldn't copy it off otherwise. You're right. No, you're right.
No, but even on the Mac, you don't use iTunes. You use some other software. You know, the Mac could be configured to use the old photo importer tool, whatever that was called.
Yeah, Lightroom sometimes launches. Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah, you could use anything you wanted.
Yep.
On Windows with an iPhone, it works the same way. You don't do it in iTunes. In fact, you can't. I mean, there's no way to do it in iTunes.
Oh, okay.
But Windows has a built-in utility. You know, Windows Live Photo Gallery has a utility. Photoshop Elements has a utility. You can use whatever you want.
Right.
For whatever reason, Windows Phone doesn't work that way. So it doesn't. It's not the type of thing where you can connect it to your computer. You don't see an icon in Explorer. You can't copy files over to it like it's a little hard drive. It doesn't show up as a photo device, you know, for a photo import utility. It is what it is, as we say. But it's a little limiting. But at least the Zune software is excellent, I guess I would say, on the PC. So it's true that a lot of people probably aren't familiar with it yet. But, you know, complaining that that's a problem is like complaining that a lot of people aren't, familiar with Windows Mobile Device Center or whatever that thing was called, which you would have to use to sync between a Windows mobile device and your PC. So, yeah, whatever. But, I mean, everything has some utility you have to use. So in the case of Windows Phone, it's going to be Zune.
All right.
Anyway, that was kind of a weird sidetrack. So
no, I apologize, but I was curious.
No, it's okay. No, it's I love the Zune stuff. And it's true on the PC, it's true on the device. And it's increasingly becoming true even on the Xbox 360. I think that thing is starting to develop into something very interesting. Nobody knows about it, and I'm so blown away by that fact. I mean, it's amazing to me how few people use this stuff, and it's actually it's a great little solution, and I think and hope that Windows Phone will popularize it in some way. On the other hand, I also believe Microsoft needs to adapt Windows Phone so it works like a normal digital camera. You know, I think it's kind of silly that you have to go through the Zune PC software, but you do.
Mm-hmm.
So with regards to some of the other stuff going on this month, you know, there were developer tool updates. Microsoft released a near final version of the developer tools for Windows Phone, which is neat if you're a developer. There's still some stuff missing. So this, you know, there are going to be further updates. And of course, there'll be a final version of it as well down the road. I think the neat thing about this stuff is just how fast it's evolved, how many releases they've had, how they've integrated this visual designer tool into the developer tools. And it's just come along really quickly. It's neat to watch that happen. And for anyone who is interested in Windows Phone development, they have an awesome set of, you know, there's a training kit which has all these different examples and labs you can walk through and great documentation and so forth. So there's a lot of that stuff going on. But the big announcement, and the one I didn't realize they were going to make, and I'm really happy they discussed this finally, is the set of online services that will back Windows Phone once it becomes available this fall. And a lot of them are things we know about already, right? So we know Bing is going to be heavily integrated into the phone in various ways. You know, the Zune stuff, Zune Pass and Zune Marketplace. We know about Xbox Live integration through the Games Hub. We know about Office integration, especially through SharePoint, but also a little bit through SkyDrive via the Office Hub. And then the Windows Live stuff. You know, my number one tip or secret, if you will, for Windows Phone is that if you are even remotely considering getting one of the smartest things you can do right up front is just develop your Windows Live ID. And by that, I mean, you probably have a Windows Live ID. Most people listening to this have probably signed up for Hotmail at some point or whatever. You know, they have some, you know, name at hotmail.com, name at live.com, name at msn.com, whatever it may be. Microsoft a couple of years ago had added the capability to connect those accounts to all kinds of third-party services, you know, Facebook, MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, although that's temporarily disabled, but, you know, Flickr, I mean, all kinds of different things. And this feed that connects you to these services will play a big part in making Windows Phone really exciting on day one, whereas you can just log on to the phone and then you get all this stuff automatically because it's all connected to you via this Windows Live feed. And that stuff is huge. So we knew about that. But two of the new bits of information that they've announced this month or this past week is first, the marketplace, which we knew there was going to be a marketplace, but they'll be calling it Windows Phone Marketplace. And this will be available both on the device and on also through the Zune PC software. And this is where you go to buy both the digital media content, you know, the Zune stuff like music, TV shows, movies, and so forth, but also the applications that will run on the phone. And it, if you're familiar with any modern smartphone like Android or iTunes, it will work, you know, basically the same way, right? Microsoft has some innovation around trial downloads and things that are, you know, deeply integrated into the platform. But essentially speaking, it's going to work the same way. The thing that they announced that was brand new, though, was something called Windows Phone Live, like Windows Live, but, you know, for phone. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of different services going on there, including the ability to, you know, automatically back up photos from the device, sort of like they did with the Kin. Sync with all your Windows Live stuff, you know, sync with your OneNote notes, and do basic backup of information from the phone, but also a free Find My Phone service where you can locate your phone on a map. You can send it an annoying ring sound that literally goes 60 seconds without stopping at maximum volume.
That's something that's, I think, really a great tool on the iPhone.
Yeah, but the difference is, well, actually, I'm not sure. Let me think about that. Yeah, I think the difference is on the iPhone, you have to pay for it, right? Don't you have to have mobile
me? You have to have mobile
to
me, you're right.
Yep. Yeah, so yep. on the Microsoft version, it will be free to anyone who has a Windows phone. You can also remotely erase the phone. And I think the more you see stuff like this, the more you come to realize this is going to become, I think, a baseline for smartphones, because these things are awesome because they have all your stuff on them, but they're also kind of dangerous because they're out there in the world and they're easy to lose and they have all your stuff on them, you know, so you want to be really careful about that stuff. But the ability to remotely wipe a phone is one of those things. I remember when Microsoft introduced this through what used to be a dedicated mobile device management server they had. That was a big deal. You know, the ability to remotely wipe at the time, a Windows mobile phone was like, oh my God, you know, that's a huge thing. With more and more individuals having smartphones, I think it's a bigger deal because, you know, hundreds of millions of people are going to have these things. And it's really important that they not, suffer identity theft or whatever.
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, it's not just any old phone now. It's got everything in it.
Yeah. I mean, you want to be really, I mean, at the very minimum, you want to make sure you're locking your phone so that if someone gets it, they hopefully simply wipe the thing out and use it, you know, for themselves or whatever. But
enjoy.
Well, I mean, hopefully that's the minimum.
But don't
right?
you lock your phone? I mean, really?
Oh, of course I do. Yeah. Yeah, I do. No, but that should be the minimum. That's what I'm saying. But, you know, I think from just a peace of mind standpoint, if you really do lose your phone or you know it's stolen or whatever, the ability to remotely wipe that thing, even if you find it, right? What if you just lost it? Right. You can remotely wipe it. You know it's safe. And then if you come across it again, and you get it back, you can just sync it back up and you're good to go.
Pretty cool.
It's important. Yeah, it's important functionality.
Pretty cool. How are you liking yours? I know you can't tell us anything about it. How's the reception?
So I can't really say much about it until Monday. So
Monday you can talk about it?
Yeah, Monday is the day when Microsoft is going to announce that they're shipping these things to developers. You know, they've got a bunch of them going out to...
I see. So you have a developer phone.
Yeah. So I guess what I'll just say, generally speaking, is that I really like it a lot. And I feel like I've made a good decision with regards to the phone and so forth. And there's a lot of stuff I want to talk very specifically that I can't yet, but I would just say, overwhelmingly, it's been a very positive experience. And I think people are going to be blown away by this thing in ways that they can't anticipate.
Exciting.
It's going to be very easy to pick Windows Phone apart. We've already talked about this for small things. You know, small things and not so small things. You know, things that were problems on other mobile phones in the past but aren't problems anymore. Things like copy and paste.
Right.
Or things like the lack of tasks in calendar or, you know, you'll be able to look at any little part of it and be like, oh, it doesn't do this. Oh, it doesn't do this. Oh, it doesn't do this. But the thing I would say to people is, you know, the people who complain about that stuff don't represent the broad consumer base of people that are going to be interested in a phone like this. And that people, like I said, who, you know, have a Windows Live ID that they've actually taken 30 minutes to just, you know, configure it for all their social networking and online services accounts. You can log on to this thing and watch the phone populate with your contacts and people, your calendar information, your email, all your social networking updates from friends, whether they're photos which show up in the pictures hub or whatever. I mean, it makes you smile. Like, you can't stop smiling when you see the stuff occur. It's amazing. And
now you've used Android phones, you've used iPhones, so you're familiar with the state of the art in smartphones, and you still think this is exciting.
It's amazing.
That's great news for Microsoft.
Yeah, and it's for all the stuff I've talked about in the past. I mean, but it's amazing to see it, and that's when it makes the difference. When it's one thing to look at the thing and hold it in your hand and play with it. You're like, okay, it's neat, whatever. When this thing lights up with your stuff, it's amazing. And there is no analog to it on other systems. You know, if you're on an iPhone, which is a beautiful device, there's no doubt about it, and has amazing applications and all that stuff. You know, if I wanted to go and look at pictures that people posted on Facebook, I'd have to think, okay, I need to load Facebook, and then I need to navigate to the feed page, and then some of those things are pictures and some aren't, and you can kind of flip through them, and you kind of go through, and they're like, well, now some of my friends are on MySpace, or some of my friends post pictures to Flickr, or some of my friends, you know, are here or there, wherever. I mean, I saw pictures that you put up on Flickr of the office there, for example, that, you know, because these things, and they appear in pictures because they're pictures.
That's
neat. You know,
neat.
All you think is pictures. And one of the things that...
It doesn't take you to the browser. It's just there.
Over the years, sometimes because I was reviewing a new version of Windows Live, sometimes just because I was, you know, maybe I will use their blogging software, whatever it was, I would post different pictures at different times to Windows Live for different reasons.
Right.
And then you go into the phone and they're just there. And it's like, what? I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to see them come up. Or you go into the Zoom software and every single video you've ever rented or watched or purchased or whatever is there.
Could you watch it on the phone?
Yeah. Wow. Now, obviously, if you rented it, you'd have to rent it again. But the point is, it's actually kept track of what you've done. And if you want to see it again, it's there.
I've always thought that when people ask me about phones, I always say, if you are really in the Windows universe, and this really solidifies this, if you've got a Xbox Live account and you're really in the Windows universe, then a Windows mobile phone makes a lot of sense. More so now, just as a Google phone makes sense if you're in the Google universe, because it knows all your stuff and it just syncs it up.
Although, you know, right. I mean, as far as the Google account stuff goes, I mean, that stuff all works automatically.
As well. Good.
Huh? It works great. So no problem there. If you have Google Calendar, contacts, calendar, or email.
I think nowadays every phone has to do this. You know, I'm looking at this new Droid X, and of course I log into my Google account, but other accounts include Facebook, MySpace, Photo Bucket, Skype, Twitter, Yahoo Mail. I mean, that's how a phone has to work nowadays. It doesn't notably have Xbox
Live. Right. I mean, I think multiple, you know, exchange style accounts, minimum, you know, interactivity with all of the major calendar, contacts, email systems, minimum, you know. But again, I think there are two major standouts for Windows Phone that, again, I think it's going to go over the heads of technical people because they're going to be like, well, yeah, but it doesn't do copy and paste.
Right.
You know, they're going to get stuck on stuff like that and not realize that to people, when they see this thing, they're going to be like, oh, my God. I mean, it's incredible, you know. And those two things are those panoramic UIs, which are amazing, and this deep integration
services. That's the Metro UI you're saying, where you slide up and down.
Yeah, pivot is what they call it.
Pivot,
yeah.
Okay. It's not Metro?
No, Metro is the UI. Pivoting is what you do. You know, left,
you're
right.
You're pivoting up in Metro.
Yeah.
I have to learn a new lingo.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to share with me?
I've said too much.
I think the excitement is palpable, and I think that's great. You know what?
It's hard not to talk about it.
Competition is great. And one of the things that propelled the PC space forward was the competition and the fact that there are many people making the hardware. You did have Windows, which gave it a solid kind of platform so that a developer could say, well, I'm going to write for this. But you had Mac. You had competition.
Oh, no, Microsoft always did their best when they had competition. And we all know history well enough to know they didn't do very well when they didn't have competition. Yes. I think the thing, you know, Windows Phone, I give credit to Microsoft for not just doing the same thing again, which would have been very easy to do, make another iPhone.
Yep.
Would have been very easy.
Yep.
Grid of icons, applications. Yeah. So they were, you know, some innovation there. It's neat. It's not just different, though. I actually think it's better. And it's funny because my iPhone has all this stuff on it that, I, you know, applications that I like and whatever. But the truth is, you know, the Windows Phone stuff. I mean, it's just like, it's all right. You have to see it with your own stuff. I mean, it's amazing. That's the only way I can say it. And I noticed, I knew that from before. I mean, I've used this thing in the past. I mean, when you log on with your stuff, you know, it's amazing. That's all I can say. So as far as, you know, people are always asking, you know, will this thing be popular? You know, will they beat this company or this company? And, you know, who can say? On the realistic side, I have to remember and remind people that, you know, and we just talked about this, the Zune software is fantastic. It's never really gone anywhere. It's based on the Media Center stuff, which was fantastic and never really went anywhere. And, you know, the legacy of this software is not so positive from a sales perspective. So, you know, who can say? But again, I think that there's a something special that happens when you see this. And I don't know how you sell this to people. I mean, without letting them log on and just see it happen. But it is amazing. And it's really an experience you can't get on the other phones. So they at least do have something unique.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I want to take a little break. We got more to talk about, lots more to talk about. But before we do, it's a good time to talk about our friends at Citrix, the folks who do GoToMeeting, GoToMyPC, the Citrix Enterprise. You see a business everywhere. And, of course, GoToAssist Express. If you're in the business of supporting people, whether it's an IT support person or a software support person, or maybe just the guy or gal that everybody in the family calls, you want to know about GoToAssist Express. We've been using it since the screensavers days for many, many years to help people on their computers. No more of those long, tedious phone calls. Click start. Okay, go to the programs. All right, now I want you to, you don't have to do that. You just, you know, you want to fix a computer? You just fix it. You go right in there and you fix it. I can give you a 30-day free trial if you'd like to see what I mean. GoToAssist.com/Windows is the place to go. Works on Windows or Mac, by the way. Don't get fooled by that URL. GoToAssist.com/Windows. 30 days, unlimited use for free. You can now. This is the nice part. Your supportees, the people you're helping, don't need to have it installed. All you do is you'll send them a link that they click, or you can give. You can say, visit the website, GoToAssist.com. Here's a ticket number. They'll enter that, and the software's on their system. And now you're in. 30 seconds later, you could do up to 8 sessions at once, so you don't have to ever wait for installs to finish again. You can do these unattended if your users allow you, and that's important because, you know, you work on your hours, not theirs. You can find out what operating system's running, what software, security software, whatever's running in the background. You can drag and drop patches and fixes from your system to theirs and on and on and on. This is, you can see, designed for remote support. It's the best. Try it right now. They have day passes, too. If you're not going to be a regular user, you can, you know, queue up Aunt Jenny, Uncle Don, Mom, Dad, Sis, get them all ready.
I'm sorry. Uncle Don?
You don't have an Uncle D-O-N, Don. Not like I have an Auntie Don, D-A-W-N.
So you can have like Uncle Don. It's like a Billy Crystal joke, you know? Uncle Don with his velvet painting collection.
Uncle Sally is out there waiting for your call. No. Please. Paul, I don't want you to suppress that normal, mirthful self that lies deep within. Go to Uncle Don and say, I want to help you, Don. I do. GoToAssist.com/Windows. It's free for 30 days. Give it a try. We love it. We know you will, too. Cybus Pack 1 for Windows 7. Nothing to see here. Move along.
Yes, right. Well, the beta's out, right? So I guess, you know, the only news here is if you want to test it for whatever reason, you like to install things. I would say, if anything, it's been over-tested, you know. It was supposed to ship a month ago. So, you know, people have asked, is it safe to install this thing? I mean, yeah, it's safe to install, but you're not going to really get much out of it at this point. I don't remember if we discussed this on the podcast. It's going to ship much later than they originally wanted it to. It was supposed to ship originally in October of this year, and now it's going to be first quarter of next year.
Excuse me, but it's just a roll-up, right? What takes so long? Is it because of corporate testing?
No, it's because the server version has some major new functionality. And
there is new functionality. Okay.
It's a single, but only in the server. Yeah.
Got it.
So if you're looking at this from a Windows 7 perspective, there's nothing going on.
Well, in fact, you probably, if you've been doing your updates as a good little boy or girl ought to, you probably got it all anyway, right?
Yeah, I suppose if you were doing a new install, you could save yourself from, you know, 300 megabytes of downloads or whatever that works out to be. But
right. Okay.
Boy, there really wasn't anything to say. I was being facetious.
I have to. How could I not? You know, the way my email works, Leah, if I don't mention it, someone will write me and say, how could you not?
It's a story.
I thought it was called Windows Weekly. How could you not mention the...
How could you? You talked about phones, for crying out loud.
Yeah, we talked about phones. Well, Windows phones. It's Windows, you know.
It's Windows? It's a phone. By the way, I just got my iPhone 4.01 update. Now with bigger bars.
Is that available only on the iPhone 4, or is it available for all of them?
And what apparently, according to the notes, the only thing they've changed is how they calculate the bars.
Awesome.
And you know, I think a lot of people read that as it's a fix. It's not a fix. It just tells you that you don't have a signal.
It's an improvement to the formula.
They're going to use, quote, AT&T's newly recommended formula. And we're going to make the bars 1 and 2 a little bigger. But what I think the gist of
bars
this is...
Bars 1 and 2 should be a 1 pixel high bar.
It should be no bar.
Well, yeah, because that's really what that is.
You should leave this in a bar. That's what you really should do. So now what this will do, though, is tell you, blame Apple for lying for the last 3 generations of phones. What this is going to do is tell you you have a crappy signal. We lied. You don't have a good signal at home. You thought you had 5 bars. That wasn't true. So don't get all excited.
Well, listen, I don't have... Well, that's not true. I do have some experience with other phones in AT&T, but everyone who's used an iPhone, if they're being honest with themselves, knows that you can look at that device. It says you have whatever number of bars, and you do anything, launch a web browser, start a phone call, and it goes down by at least 50% the second you start doing something.
Right.
Every single time.
I used to have, oh, wait a minute, it's going down. I used to have, let me stop holding the phone. I should hold it in the Vulcan 3-finger.
Yes.
Because it's
going
down.
You should use one of those like kitchen tong things, you know.
Really. But no, this has 4 bars where I used to have 5 bars. And the bars do look like they're a little bit, they're kind of more like a camel instead of a graph. And now if I hold it, of course, and as we all know, the bars will go from... There I go. Bye-bye, bars.
Problem solved.
In fact, that's fixed.
The press conference tomorrow is going to be Apple saying, I don't know why we're even here. We solved the problem yesterday.
Can't you tell?
When we released that software update.
Oh, you know, maybe now I won't be able to get to 0 bars because of this new
fix. What the countdown now is going to be until either one of us gets an email from someone who says, you know, this Apple software update actually fixed my problem.
I'm down to 2 bars. And by the way, my Wi-Fi dropped as well as I held it.
Nice.
So it turns out
putting the antenna right around the outside edge where you touch it wasn't such an innovative idea after all.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, enough of that. But I do have now, there's the Wi-Fi. It's all dropping. But it may never go to 0 now because it's new. That's what I'm wondering is, does the patch keep it from going to 0 bars?
That would be hilarious.
You can't get no signal.
Right.
Well, you can, but now it went black. So I hope you enjoyed that little moment of
what life. I want to know is why this patch is 378 megabytes.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So I would have to guess they're patching more than just the bars, unless they have high resolution JPEG.
I think it has something to do with their. This was always the case.
They have to write the whole thing.
Yeah, they have to overwrite a bunch of stuff.
Maybe they have to just write the whole operating system over to fix it. See? I don't know. That's the new. That's 4 bars, and then we'll just go. Whoa! There goes the Wi-Fi right away. Anyway, enough of that. Next subject. I'm so excited about this. I'm going to watch my bars while you talk about the new exciting Small Business Aurora.
Yeah, Small Business Server. I should have said Aurora.
Aurora Small Business Server.
Yeah, so Microsoft has a small business server product, which you may be familiar with. It's a combination of a bunch of servers into a single installable package. You know, it bundles Windows Server with Exchange and SharePoint and some security product, whatever that is now, and optionally with SQL Server and so forth. And it provides small business servers with a way to buy all the stuff in one whack for a low price. And it's been a good product for Microsoft. The problem is, you know, as times change and as we move into this cloud computing future that we're heading toward, you know, these on-premises servers to small businesses don't make a lot of sense. And in dating back almost a couple of years now, I'd have to say, I've been talking to Microsoft about the need for a cloud computing style small business server, you know, that maybe they could take their Windows Home Server product, which is basically just storage and disk management and user management, and, you know, throw some cloud services at it and call it small business server, whatever. And amazingly, that's almost exactly what this thing is. So for the next version of small business server, which is based on Windows Server 2008 R2, you know, the current version of the product, there are actually going to be two small business server lines. The first one is just Small Business Server 7, and it's an update to the existing Small Business Server product. I don't want to talk about that at all. I'm not interested at all in that product. But the other one is codenamed Aurora. They haven't given it a final name yet. And it's based on the same code base as Veil, you know, the new version of Windows Home Server. So it looks and works almost exactly the same. The management consoles are almost exactly the same. What's amazing about it is behind the scenes, it's actually working with an Active Directory domain, not with a work group like Windows Home Server is. So as you create users and add PCs to the mix and so forth, it's actually doing so within the context of an Active Directory domain. And that means when you integrate with these online services that Microsoft has, like Hosted Exchange, Hosted SharePoint, or whatever, you can use this kind of what they're calling a cross-premises type solution where some stuff is on-premises and some stuff is up in the cloud. And you can mix and match your ID management, you know, federated ID management between the cloud and the local services. So I think this thing makes a lot of sense. And I've known about this for a long time. I finally got to see it a couple months ago. They've been promised me a beta version of this anytime now, and it's been a little delayed, I guess. But I'm really eager to try this out. And I think it's going to be something that I think even a lot of people at home are going to want to check out. If you want something that's a little more sophisticated than Windows Home Server, you know, and based on a domain, right? Something that's a little less media heavy. In fact, I could almost anticipate a scenario where you have, you know, users in your home and PCs in your home being managed through Aurora, but you're serving up digital media through Veil, you know, the version of Windows Home Server that's coming out. I mean, I could almost see doing both, especially for people like me who have a lot of different PCs in the home. So
it will do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic. I mean, the stuff they're doing in Veil, i.e. the next version of Windows Home Server, is really exciting. This is sort of that, but with domain support, you know. And it's just a neat product. And I'm again, I don't have it here to test. It's killing me, but I'm sometime soon, I'm told. So I'm really eager to test that out. So the beta is going to happen soon. Like Veil, it will be public. So I would say sometime in the next 30 days, you'll be able to check this out for yourself. So I'll definitely be reviewing it whenever that happens.
Cool. And do you think people will put this on NAS-style devices? I guess that's what it's designed for, right?
Yeah, it's going to be on appliance-style.
Will you buy this, or will you? You'll buy it on an existing box.
Yeah. And it's not for existing environments. So if you have if you're a business that has an Active Directory, you can't buy this and add it to it. This is for starting, you know, a new domain.
Okay.
But it's got all the same awesome disk management stuff that Windows Home Server has. You know, the drive extender technology where you can just plug in drives and it puts it into one big storage pool. You don't have drive letters and all that stuff. It's really, really nice.
Aurora, baby.
Yep. Yeah.
Windows Intune. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This is
we did, yeah.
This is the nice thing. This is a feature that will let you tune up your PC from Microsoft.
Yeah, so they made some more announcements around this. You know, back in May when they announced the first beta, they only allowed 1,000 people to join the beta. And, of course, it filled up immediately. So now they've opened up the new beta to 10,000 people. So you should sign up for that.
Too late, I'm sure, by now.
Yeah, possibly. They also announced pricing, which is a little heftier than I was hoping for, but it's $11 per PC per month. But it also includes a license for Windows 7 Enterprise, which is the full Mildale version. So that takes a little bit out of that. I mean, even just signing up for a year, it's a good price. I mean,
not a product for end users. This is a business.
No. And that's the thing. I think we mentioned this last time, but the initial version of Windows Intune is aimed at mid-sized businesses. And I'm astonished by that because it's such a small market. And maybe that was the point. Maybe they want to limit it and just kind of see what happens with it. But I really feel that the sweet spot for this thing is going to be small businesses and even individuals. And when you talk about those kinds of people, it has to be significantly less expensive than that.
Yeah, so if you take out the Windows 7 at home.
No. It's crazy. So it should be 10 bucks a month for all the PCs in your house would be too much. I mean, I think it need and I think once they remove the Windows 7 Enterprise license, they can kind of adjust that thing down. But what I'd like to see is home pricing for $5 per month for up to 3 computers, something like that. I think it's going to get there. But I think they're specifically limiting the market for this in the beginning because they want to see how this thing works in the real world. You know, you got to remember they're taking something that has historically been an on-premises management server. They're putting it up in Microsoft's data centers, and then they're allowing businesses or Microsoft partners to manage multiple accounts simultaneously. So I think they need to just gauge how this works from a bandwidth perspective and so forth. But it is awesome. I mean, it works great. I've been using it now for a couple of months, and it works really, really well. But yeah, it's a little too expensive. It's just too expensive, period, I think, for mainstream market. But yeah. I think they'll get there.
Well, and this is the kind of thing maybe you do in business where they're willing to pay for it because it's a lot cheaper than an IT professional. And then you learn a lot. You learn a ton of stuff. And then you offer a consumer version that has a much wider range of capabilities and is tried and true, right?
Yeah, and I also think, you know, the other thing to remember with this kind of product is that this is the essence of cloud computing in many ways, right? You take something that has historically been very expensive, something you did in-house that you had to hire people with special skills, and then if they ever left, you were screwed because you had to find someone that could, you know, work with all the stuff you already have, and you know, they would come in and not understand half of what the other person was doing. And you kind of just take it out of there and you say, look, for some kind of a fee per month, we'll just do this for you, mm-hmm. you know? And whether you're talking about email hosting or, collaboration storage or, you know, communication server type stuff or this, you know, management services, it's smart, you know? And I think companies that got it too involved in the PC stuff or in just technology in general, it's like over time you forget what you're in business for. You know, you make a widget. You're not. Why are you an IT specialist? Right. You know, why do you have this stuff in house? It doesn't make sense.
Right.
I think it's especially true for small businesses. So, I think the future of Intune is going to be across all the markets, but I think it's going to see the most success on the low end.
Hey, did you see the numbers Intel showed? I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, everyone was surprised.
Yeah. I mean, so, for one thing, I mean, the stock market has really been pumped up by people cutting costs and looking like they're more profitable. But this is bigger sales by a big.
It's just bigger sales. And it's not just bigger sales, but it's the sales are huge. They're way higher than we thought. They're way higher than you thought. And by the way, they're going to keep going up. I mean, it's really, it's just good news everywhere. You know,
it's not just netbooks.
No. It's everything. It's
high. Give us a summary. Tell us the good
news. So first of all PC chip sales are up. You know, regular PCs, laptops, high-end laptops, netbooks, servers, everything. In fact, the server growth stuff, was shockingly high. I mean, let me see if I can find the exact number. PC revenues, this is at Intel, grew 5% overall, but server revenues grew 13%, and netbook revenues grew 16%, suggesting that, you know, anyone who was worried about the iPad cutting into, netbooks, it certainly hasn't happened yet. They foresee that in the next 12 months, PC makers are going to ship 370 million PCs, higher than previously thought. They sold in the quarter. Now, this is not from Intel, but Gartner's estimate for PC sales for the past quarter. Almost 83 million PCs in the world. 21% jump over the same quarter a year before. And almost 18 million PCs just in the United States, and that's up 16%.
Wow.
And it's just astonishing because, you know, again, we're still kind of at the trailing end of this recession, and there's still some worry that maybe we're not out of it. But according to Intel, businesses are finally spending money again on technology. And even in the best of times, you know, businesses are notorious for saving money and spending as little as possible. So I think what's happened is that they've done this for so long that, you know, there's going to be a period of time here where they just have to kind of catch up. And it looks like, you know, they're buying servers again, which is crazy. So that's some strong demand from the corporate side, which is unexpected. I think we expected a certain amount of growth from just the consumer side, but it's nice to see businesses finally, you know, getting in there as well.
Good news. Maybe does this, you think, a precursor to an improved economy too, or is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is one of many things you could look
it's
at for that. I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the indicators. Yeah. I hope so, obviously, but, yeah.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Really good news.
Yep.
And I guess we've talked about the iPhone enough. I mean, the bar is obviously the story. There will have a press conference as you hear this podcast. If you're not watching live, it will have already happened.
The one thing that's really interesting to me in a way so far, I mean, obviously as this thing develops, we'll see what really happens. But I had opined to someone some time ago, and I don't remember if it was probably my poor wife who suffers through my crazy, insane, spitting rants at the breakfast table or whatever it is, that knowing Apple, that my prediction for the way that they would handle this is a couple weeks ago, was that they would silently just make a new version of this antenna and start shipping it in new devices. And that as people complained, they would just swap these things out, that they would try to avoid a recall.
Right.
And there was actually a story today that is, in fact, what is happening. Now, this has not been confirmed, and we'll see what they say.
Really?
Yeah, it was either Gizmodo or Engadget, one of those sites.
Really? So they're slipstreaming a hardware fix.
And according to people who have these things, that band, you know, that two-piece antenna that encircles the device has got a dip, you know, more of a matte look to it.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't have those little bumps as you glide your finger over it, you know, that it's like a solid design, not a, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet they coated it with something.
Right, right. Because obviously, I mean, Apple needs to respond because it's gotten out of control. It's crazy. I mean, how bad the news is.
People are saying they got to do a recall, which estimates are $1.5 billion to do that. I can't see that happening.
Okay, so I don't know about that. I would remind people that Microsoft's recall of the Xbox 360 was $1.2 billion. No, it was less.
That much, okay.
And that figure doesn't make sense to me. Apple's only sold a couple of million of these things. I mean, Microsoft sold somewhere along the lines of, you know, 15 or more million faulty Xbox 360. So I don't know what a recall would cost, but if you want to use the Xbox 360 as a gauge, it would have to be a lot less than that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my guess. And that has been my guess. And now that it's kind of happening, it's interesting. I mean, I think Apple has to be careful about announcing this, because once Apple says publicly, if you just bring it in, we're going to replace it, everyone's going to bring one in.
Right. I mean,
why wouldn't you? Why would you hold on to this faulty thing if you could have a brand new, you know, perfectly working one? So
my prediction is Apple will announce that they're going to give away the bumper for a mere $5, which, by the way, costs 30 cents to make, and they're charging 30 bucks for it. And anybody who wants a $5 bumper, just come on in. We'll give it to you. And that fixes the problem.
Yikes. See, I think
it's a little late for that.
They should be giving that thing away. That would be.
How much can a piece of plastic cost? Seriously.
How much? It doesn't really matter.
They've already sold enough to make enough money to pay for free bumpers for the entire world.
This is like the security software picture on Windows. You know, in my view, Microsoft software is, you know, implicitly responsible for whatever security problems that are present in Windows. Thus, Microsoft needs to shoulder the cost and the blame and just put security software in Windows. That's my opinion on that one. On the same vein, I think it is Apple's onus to fix this problem. And the very least they should do is give you a bumper, at the very least.
I agree.
That's the least they should do.
I agree. Since we do know the bumper does seem to fix the problem. And that's, I would guess, why they made the bumper. They've never made anything so stupid before. Actually, they have. They had iPod socks for a while.
Yeah, they've had stupid things before. But I think the thing most interesting about the iPod 4 bumper is that it was available on launch day. They've never had a case of any kind available the day an iPhone launched. You know, it's almost like they knew about it.
Yeah, that's what I think. It's pretty obvious, in fact.
There's been some stories about that as well.
Yeah. We'll watch. We'll know soon enough. And for those of you watching or listening after the fact,
you already know.
And you know that, you can say, they were so smart. Or, what fools they be.
Typical drivel.
What fools these mortals be. Hey, before we get to our Windows 7 feature and tip of the week, let me get to CarbonitePro.com. My tip for those of you in business, I've talked about Carbonite before, the great backup solutions, online backup. Now, you know, my friend Peter Krogh, who wrote the Damn book, the digital asset management book. He's a photographer. He is an expert on backup. He has something he calls 3-2-1 backup. And all backup solutions, if you're going to rely on them, should adhere to this principle. Three copies, that's the original plus two backups, two different forms of media, as in, for instance, a hard drive, a DVD, and, you know, two different media, and one of them
and this is the key, has to be off-site. If you've got a backup sitting next to your computer and your house burns down, what do you got? Nothing. A hurricane, a tornado, thieves break in. They're going to steal the whole thing. You have no backup. Your backup has to be off-site. Solve this problem easily with Carbonite online backup. Soon as you, in fact, try it free. If you're in small business, Carbonite Pro for small business for 30 days. Go there right now, carbonitepro.com. You download it. You can put it on every machine. There's no per-seat license. You just pay for the data stored, and very, very reasonable. It starts as low as $10 a month. You've got it encrypted, SSL encryption as it's going, AES 256-bit encryption if you choose to really preserve your privacy. If you're in business, that's probably a requirement. You've got a central dashboard so you can see which systems are backed up. You can any one of your users can restore their backup if you let them do that. This is such a great product. Carbonite for small businesses. It's called Carbonite Pro, and you can try it free. No obligation. Very simple. Just go to carbonitepro.com. Do yourself a favor. You've been planning this. Do it. Carbonitepro.com. Or else. Well, you know, because people call me all the time on the radio show and say, I lost, you know. And if you it's one thing to lose your baby pictures.
I can tell you, this is how backing up works. You get the religion when you lose something important.
Yep.
Yeah. That's how I did it. And I know that's how most people do it.
So don't wait. Don't get the religion. Don't be that person who has to wait till something horrible happens for you to be proactive. Do it now. That's all. Our Windows 7, you want to start with the feature of the week?
Sure.
All right.
So this is startup repair and also the other, you know, Windows 7 system recovery options and so forth. One of the neat secrets in Windows Vista was that you could install this environment on your PC after you had Vista installed that would allow you to boot into this recovery environment. And in Windows 7, that's actually just there by default. Microsoft just puts that right on the disk. And the way you access this is between the BIOS screen and then that starting Windows screen, you start tapping F8, and then you get a menu. And one of the options in that menu will be Startup Repair. And you basically boot into this thing that looks a little bit like Windows Setup. And it gives you, you have to log on to an administrator account, you know, typically your own account. But it gives you this, and I brought it up here in this other PC so I can, actually look at it. But it gives you this menu of options. You can do things like a system restore, you know, run a system restore point or restore to a system restore point from outside of the OS. System image
recovery.
That's nice,
because a lot of times you want to do a system restore, you can't get your system booted.
Yeah. Right. And that's a very nice feature. Last week's, I guess it was tip of the week, I talked about how you can, you know, get a clean install of Windows, even if it's a junky PC Maker supplied version of Windows, by removing the crapware and then using what used to be called Windows Backup. I still think of it as backup. Using the backup and recovery tools to do a system image, right? If you want to restore your computer to a system image that you previously saved, you also do it from this screen. It's one of the options that's available here. So the system recovery tools, among other things, allows you to do this stuff. And it's probably worth mentioning, too, that these system recovery tools are available on the setup disk that, you know, you might have if you bought Windows in a store. You can also make a system repair disk, you know, that does this. It's a standalone boot disk that has this stuff. But Startup Repair itself is super simple. It literally just sits there and it examines your system. And it comes back with a list of things that could potentially have gone wrong. And it's just, if there are any problems, it just fixes them. It looks at all kinds of different things, whether I made a list in here in the notes, you know, which bootable versions of Windows exist on the PC, whether they're accessible to the bootloader.
Do you have a GSM phone somewhere near your microphone?
I do. Oh, I can hear it now.
Yeah, baby.
You know what that is? Actually, that's my speaker. I see what you're saying. Because
it's next to the speaker and we're getting it through the speaker. It's not coming through the mic.
You heard a little
you know,
I will remove those devices. I apologize.
Now we have a little clue. I won't say as to what.
From there. gotta be careful.
Be careful.
Is that better?
That's much better.
Anyway, it checks all kinds of stuff. If there's anything in there that will not allow Windows to boot, it will fix it. And then you just reboot and you're good to go. So there are many reasons why Windows may fail to boot. In the bad old days, you could have gone in and hand-edited boot any and destroyed it. You can't do that. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I was talking to somebody in the studio audience who was crawling beneath the cameras, and I just wanted to say, do you need to humble yourself before me like that?
Right, right. Actually, we prefer if you do the limbo.
The limbo, exactly. Go backwards. Yeah.
You can't actually hand edit Boudini anymore in Windows 7 because it doesn't exist anymore.
Oh,
but
really?
They're a different thing.
Oh.
Yeah, they have a different style of different way of storing the boot menu, but there are different ways you could blow this thing away. You could install, you know, Linux in a dual boot, you know, and maybe, you know, by mistake it blew away the bootloader. So this would be one way to get that thing back.
Right.
There's all kinds of different reasons for this, but the thing that's neat about this is if you actually do need it, this thing runs automatically. So if you run, if you reboot your computer and it can't boot, it will boot into this, and it will try to fix it automatically. So it's a neat little tool.
It does underscore the need for a boot disk, though, a CD, preferably a Windows install disk, right?
Yeah, so you can use the Windows setup disk if you have that. Last week's tip, I talked about creating a startup repair disk. Very simple. It works on a CD-ROM. You don't even need a DVD. Just any recordable CD works. It's very small. And it will boot into this environment. So there are many ways you can recover a Windows system. The nice thing is, though, it's on the disk. So in many cases, it just works, and it will just work automatically. So it's hopefully something you'll never even notice, but it is there if you need it.
That's great. I'll tell you, it's one of the most common questions people have. How do I fix a non-booting system or get it back the way it was?
Right, right, right.
And now our Windows 7 tip of the week.
Yeah, this one is this one's kind of bizarre. It's there is a free and hidden power management utility in Windows called PowerConfig that will examine your system. Well, it does other things too, but one of the things you can do is it's a command line utility, and you supply it with the proper command line
parameters.
Thank you, sir.
Parameters,
and it will create a report for you. And what's interesting about this report is that it's divided into different sections. You've got errors at the top, and I've been shocked to discover that the three PCs I've tested on this all have numerous errors, warnings, and then just other information about the PC. And the errors are such things as, and this is my desktop PC, for example. It said, the computer is not configured to automatically sleep after a period of inactivity. Hmm. Now, it's not an interactive report. You can't click on that and then go fix it, but if you have an understanding of how Windows 7's power options utilities work, you can go, and by the way, just start menu search power and you'll see power options. You can go into these control panels and configure things to more ably handle power management features. So for example, for whatever reason, my desktop computer is not configured. In fact, the reason is in the report. In my case, I have a utility, and it's related to Zune, that is prevented my computer from going into sleep. So you can actually, you know, find out what it is and go fix it. There are warnings, things like, for example, on my desktop computer, the power policy for my wireless network adapter is not configured to use low power mode. So it's not operating as efficiently as it could. It's a really interesting and detailed report. And like any kind of health monitoring thing, it will probably freak you out a little more than it needs to. But, it's like your computer is cancer. It's not that bad, but it's definitely something to run because, you know, in this day and age, I think for a long time with Windows, people would micromanage the power management stuff, meaning they would go in there and they would say, okay, I want this to run at high performance all the time and I don't care about power management.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, the truth is with modern processors and chipsets and so forth, you know, these things can run very intelligently and use low power mode when possible and then flip on the power when they need it. And it just works automatically. And if you've done anything or utilities or applications or services you've installed have changed any of that stuff, this will give you a heads up to that, and you can go in. You have to have a little bit of know-how. So when I write up the tip for the site, I'll explain where you can go to look for to fix these problems. And, of course, you can run the thing again and see if you made a difference.
You're so manly using the command line and all.
I know. It even requires an admin-level command line. You have to run it with administrative privileges.
Oh, I'm getting chills.
That's a tip, my friend. If it runs in standard users mode, it's
useless.
It's not a tip.
It's not a tip. That's just a command. This is a power command.
That's right.
Powerful. So I have been using the Audible app now on iPhone and Android.
Just going to ask you about that.
I love it. Well, I probably have sung the praises of the app on the Android, right? Which is a beta app. But
yeah, okay. Actually, yes, you have.
Yeah. And so the Audible for the iPhone is very, pretty much the same. Very similar.
I think that's a neat idea. You know, obviously, it's easy to sync Audible books in on the iPhone with your iTunes, right? That works automatically. But actually, you know, sometimes you're out on the road.
Right.
And you have a library of books.
This is the thing I love about Audible. You know, your library is always available to you.
Yeah.
And so...
No, it's not just... let me see. I was just looking at that.
It's the whole thing. I have 450 books in the library.
Yeah, it's on the iPhone. It's on Android.
I'm sure they'll do a Windows mobile version now that they've kind of got the hang of it.
BlackBerry. There's one for BlackBerry.
There's one for BlackBerry. You're right, yeah. So it will download via Wi-Fi, which is great.
Yep.
All the books you've ever purchased are here.
So when looking at that, it looks a lot like the Amazon Kindle interface.
Right.
It's like your history. Scroll through that list of, makes a lot of sense, right? Because they're owned by Amazon.
And yeah, actually, I wonder if that's maybe where this happened. So on the iPhone, at least, this doesn't work on Android, but on the iPhone, if you have put books on your device via iTunes, those will also show up in here. They have, I'm still syncing that way because at least for the last couple of days, Audible's had a little bit of a problem with too many people downloading this.
Actually, I was going to discuss that with you too.
Yeah. In fact, they put out an alert. This is another thing that's in the app. You can get alerts. So it says download issues. Yeah, we're sorry. It's not just the iPhone app. Everybody, but what I know what's happening is all these, is millions of iPhone users have downloaded this app and are saying, let me download all of my, re-download all my books.
Yeah. Damn you.
Damn you. So look, you get, they have badges for your listening level. It keeps track. Yep. There's stats. This is just really neat. It's a nice job. And so now even better for Android, for iPhone, and for BlackBerry, this great Audible app. But what is Audible? People are probably saying, no, they're not. No, they're not. If they've listened to this show for even a second, they know. We talk about it all the time.
Tell me, what is?
What is Audible? Audible is that great online site that contains 75,000 plus audiobooks recorded by the best readers in the world. They sound great. They're enjoyable. And in every area, I mean, we're talking fiction and nonfiction, romance, science fiction, self-development. There's books for kids and teens. I mean, lots of them. They're having a big paperback sale right now. So if you go a la carte, you can buy, you know, books as low as $5.95. But my recommendation is getting an account, getting a subscription. I have the Platinum plan. I get two books a month. Mm-hmm. There's also Gold plan. In fact, what I'm going to do right now, if you sign up for the Gold plan by going to audible.com/windows, your first book's free. There'll be no charge for the first month. So get that book. You can cancel it any time, so it's absolutely free. And the book is yours to keep forever. So it's always in your library. You can indeed go a la carte for here. Yep. For instance, for $4.95, The Man Who Loved Too Much. Oh no, sorry, the book's too much. The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Requiem for Innocence. So there's a lot of great stuff on here. Cro-Magnon, How the Ice Age Gave Birth to the First Modern Humans. Mm-hmm. But you are going to recommend something that I've recommended before that is just a fantastic book. Go ahead and give your plug, and I'll find it.
Interestingly, this one is from a listener, James Scandal, who recommended this, and it looks so awesome. I tried to download it today, and I can't because they're having problems.
Yeah.
So it's actually, I'm stuck. I've got this Audible download manager that keeps popping up with an error message.
Yeah.
But
I know it's bad. They're working on it. They're trying to fix it.
Yeah, hopefully this will be fixed by the time. But it's called Predictably Irrational: The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions by Dan
Ariely. Yeah. He has another book that just came out that's a sequel to it.
Oh,
if you,
awesome.
If you like Freakonomics, you'll love
that's what I was going to say. This looks just like Freakonomics. And it delves into sort of that. And this is how the conversation my wife came out about the newspaper article earlier. You give a person an aspirin that costs 50 cents and you give another person an aspirin that costs $5. And the guy who takes the $5 one feels better.
Yeah.
Because they feel like they're getting something. The psychology of decision making and how, things like marketing affect the way we make decisions. It looks amazing.
It explains why the Wall Street Journal, for instance, has three different prices, one medium, one high, one very high, and how it works to push you towards the higher priced. I mean, when you read this book, it's like a light bulb goes on. You go, oh,
I get it.
My wife and I watch a show called House Hunters International, and it's almost never what we want to see. It's almost always about some extravagant beach home disaster in Nicaragua or something, and I have no idea why people buy stuff like that. But, you know, when confronted with three different homes, right, a home that is in your price range and exactly what you're looking for, a home that is less than what you wanted to spend and, you know, otherwise is fine, or then a home that is over your price range, but is just extravagant and beautiful and comes with some kind of service, they almost always take the expensive one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And my wife and I make the same call every show. They'll come up to the one that's crazy, and we always go, that's the one they're going to buy. And yep, they always do, every single time.
Every time.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny? And this book explains why that happens. It's just fantastic. Shoot. Uh-oh, what happened? Are you okay?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't look at the time.
Oh.
I had a little reminder. That
We're almost done.
No, I'm good.
We're almost done. I just want to tell people, audible.com/windows, get your free book. This is a great first choice for your, as you can see, it's in my library. I love this book, Predictably Irrational, The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decision. You'll be driving down the road and hitting your forehead at the same time, going, whoa, oh, no, you're kidding. It's so great. I love it. Audible.com/windows. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. And now, Paul.
Yes, sir.
It's time for you to make your software pick of the week.
Jeez.
Yay!
I just throw out the Windows Phone developer tools I mentioned earlier. If you're a mobile developer at all, you really should be checking that stuff out. But my actual software pick of the week is the recently renamed Oracle VM VirtualBox, now in version 3.2.6.
Oh, they renamed Sun. It used to be Sun.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been renamed.
This is.
I get a lot of
product
questions about the virtualization stuff, you know. And as we've discussed, and if we haven't, someday soon we will discuss the Windows 7 feature that is Windows Virtual PC. But for me personally, for testing other OSs that run in a window in a virtual environment under my, you know, host OS, such as it is, I actually prefer VirtualBox every single time.
Yep.
The reason being that Windows Virtual PC is a very specific kind of solution. It's designed for people who really want to just run that one application that only runs on that older version of Windows. It can be configured to do other things, but that's really what Windows Virtual PC is optimized for. And that's great. And I completely understand that. But for my own purposes, VirtualBox makes a lot more sense. So
I use it on Mac and Windows. I just love this.
Yeah.
Thing. It's
free.
It's free.
And that's the thing. In my mind, I would say this is the best free client virtualization solution available. So, and the one you should check out. So that's my recommendation, certainly. So virtualbox.org. Don't make the mistake of going to virtualbox.com, which is unrelated. I think we've all done that.
Yes.
But virtualbox.org.
Okay.
Now part of the Oracle Empire.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, they've got the little Oracle logo, but otherwise it looks the same, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. It's always worked well. It still does. Yeah.
It might be kind of cool if actually Oracle put some money behind this. Runs on Windows, Linux, Macintosh, and OpenSolaris.
Yeah.
Cool. Paul, we have run out of time. I thank you so much. You are a gentleman and a scholar. The book is on its way to the publisher.
Yes.
Someday.
It is. It's actually getting there. I've submitted several chapters like a real author.
Wow.
I feel I'm very, it's going to be an awful month regardless, but we're getting there.
Windows Phone Secrets and, of course, Windows 7 Secrets he worked just as hard on and is available at bookstores right now. If you're a Windows 7 user, it's a must have. I have it. Also,
I should go back and watch the podcast, you know, right around the time I was finishing that book. I was probably a disaster.
You were, yeah. Well, I'll put it this way.
Yep. Smelly and shaven.
No, you were working hard, and I was shocked, frankly, when you said, I'm going to do another book. I thought,
what the hell's wrong with this guy?
It's like childbirth. He's obviously, there's some sort of hormone that's flooded his brain now, and he doesn't remember. Because it wasn't a pleasant time for you.
It never is. And I've never once had a good time writing a book. And
no,
yet I've,
that's why
I've done
stopped.
Over 20 of them. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm excited about Windows Phone, though. I think that's part of it.
Yeah,
I really am, genuinely.
You have a need to share.
I have a need to share. I am a needy person.
No, it's not needy. I mean, you have a mission.
Yeah.
You have a mission to share. You want
to my economic detriment. I guess really how it works. Well, it's almost like flushing money down the toilet.
No, it's just your time.
It just takes longer.
Just flushing your time down the toilet, that's all.
Yeah.
He's also the news editor, Windows IT Pro, but the best thing to do is go to his website, which has links to his blog and all the other things that he does online, and that is, of course, the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mm-hmm. All have a great week. You'll be here next week, and Germany the week following.
Actually, let me look. I think I'm here for 2 more weeks. Okay. Yeah. No, the next 2 weeks I'll be here.
You'll be here next week. I'll be gone the 29th.
Where are you going? Are you going away?
We're going to Detroit. Well, the first week we're going to Detroit. Yeah.
What?
Well, it's the sun and fun capital of the world, I've been told.
Really?
No. We're going. They have lovely beaches.
I don't want to disavow you of that notion.
And
but...
I understand that the native girls give you beautiful flowers when you get off the plane.
Well, I thought it was a post-apocalyptic disaster area, you know, but maybe it's somewhere in the middle.
I came there for the waters. But we are in the desert. I was misinformed. We're going for, I'm excited, Maker Faire Detroit. Maker Faire is going to be there. We are going to get a tour of the Rouge plant on the 30th.
Yeah.
So we're flying out the 29th, so I won't be here. Tom Merritt will do the show with you on the 29th.
Yeah.
The Rouge plant on the 30th, we're going to, I can't wait. I think we're going to stream that live, and then the Maker Faire will be streamed live on Saturday the 31st. The following week, I'm going to, sadly to say, bring my daughter to college.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Where to?
She's going to Upper New York State to Bard on the Hudson River. Beautiful, beautiful campus.
Yep.
So we drop her off. We fly out the 5th and we drop her off the 7th and then we come home crying. So I'm looking forward to that. But we'll be out of. So Tom Merritt again will host the show on the 5th.
Okay. I should be. I'll be in Germany on the 5th.
Yeah. And then will you be back on the 12th?
Because well, I'll still be in Germany, but yeah, I mean, you'll be back. Yeah,
you actually get more bandwidth in Germany, I think, than you do in Dedham.
We'll see.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
be surprised.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Hey, by the way, I forgot to mention we are going to do a meetup Friday, July 30th. We're thinking in Detroit, actually in Dearborn. We're thinking of doing it at the Hyatt there. July 31st, Maker Faire. July 30th, we're going to be doing a meetup that evening, on a Friday evening. We'll be at the Hyatt Dearborn at the Archimedes Lounge downstairs from 7 to 10 on Friday the 30th. Email Lisa at twittv to RSVP.